Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is Anthony Metana from Hook Audio. But first, the mayor of London is trying to save the music venues. This is important because just like every major city, actually every city everywhere, music venues are dying. And there's a number of reasons why they're dying. A big one, of course, is the fact that rents are going up. In just about every city, real estate is more and more expensive, and that makes it tougher and tougher for a club or music venue to stay open. The second thing that's happening is there's a big problem with liability, of course. And what that means is if someone gets a little tipsy at a venue and then they leave and get into an accident, they have a tendency to sue the venue. So the insurance just to open up a music venue is expensive. And, you know, that's a big problem. And of course, there's a lot of club owners that just don't want to deal with it. So that's a problem as well. And of course, another one is the fact that as soon as a club becomes really popular, there's a lot of people that you'll find all of a sudden are flooding to this venue, which is great for the venue, but it's usually bad for the neighborhood because parking becomes an issue, loud noise becomes an issue, and drunken patrons becomes an issue. Familiarity breeds contempt, so to speak, when you have a venue all of a sudden that's really popular in your neighborhood. So all of these things are working against music venues just about everywhere in the world. It wasn't always like this, of course. Way back before 1982, you can go to any city and you would find either a church or a club on every bar, just about. And what would happen is there were so many clubs that if you were a musician, you had a band, you could easily play four nights, five nights, even seven nights a week if you're any good, and you could actually make a living just from playing in clubs. There are people that probably do that now, but it's a whole lot rarer than it used to be back then. And what killed that was the drunken driving laws, the DUI laws that came out in 1982. And as soon as that happened, it basically killed clubs dead. Because, once again, we have this liability issue. As soon as someone drinks at a club and they go out and have an accident, all of a sudden they sue the club. Or the family sues the club. So that began the first wave of clubs and music venues closing. And of course, club owners have gotten smarter about it. They know how to protect themselves a lot more than they used to. But the fact of the matter is that protection comes at a price. So it's very expensive to open up a club anymore. And it's even more expensive when you consider the price of real estate. So any club that's in what you might think of as a good part of town is also an expensive part of town. So all of these are reasons why you're seeing music venues go out of business. And this is everywhere, every city. But as I started to say in the beginning here, Boris Johnson, the mayor of London, is at least trying to do something to save his music venues. And he's realized that a lot of really good venues have gone away in the last couple of years. So what he's done is he's assembled a task force that consists of musicians and the venues themselves, and even the Ministry of Culture, in order to figure this out. So this is brand new. We don't know if it's going to work. But anyway, you have to give them props for at least trying. And it would be great if some mayors in U.S. cities would also take this up as well and try to do the same thing. Although, let's face it, most mayors have their hands full with just running the cities as it is. So don't hold your breath on that one. But anyway, it's nice that someone is starting this, and let's hope that there's some success and it's something to draw on for cities around the world and their music venues. If you have any questions or comments, send them to questions@bobbyownercircle.com. Don't forget about my new coaching program. It's 101 mixing tricks, big studio tricks with a small studio. You can go to 101mixingtricks.com to learn more. The next topic I want to address is analog dead? Yes, you heard me right. Is analog dead? Now, once upon a time, everything was analog, so that was never even a question. But as we get more and more into the digital age, we find that things that used to be analog are now addressed in the digital domain, especially signal processing. I mean, how many people actually go out and buy digital reverb? Very few people. How many of us go out and buy compressors like we used to? Well, you might have a few around, but you certainly don't have the 10 and 12 and 16 that studios used to have. About the only thing that people buy, when it really comes down to it, are microphone preamps. And frankly, there are so many of them around. Everybody and their brother has a 1073 or an API clone or just about any popular preamp. There are tons of different clones. So we're at the saturation point there. But really, when it comes down to it, you have all of the front end, like mic preamps and compressors, and you have back end products that are analog, like speakers and monitor controllers. And even those, in some cases, are at least partially digital. So, as a result, everything in between is digital. And that's a good thing, and it's a bad thing. It's a good thing in the fact that it's made everything a lot cheaper. And in some cases, it's made it better because now, for less money, we can have many more features, and we have much more power than ever before. Like, for instance, what you can get in a free DAW application right now is so much more powerful than what the Beatles had to work with way back in 1964. It doesn't necessarily mean it sounds better, but it's more powerful. You have a lot more to work with. Now, that being said, again, no one buys tape machines anymore. As a matter of fact, there are people trying to give them away. We're coming to a point in audio where analog is less and less important. As a matter of fact, it used to be at least when audio designers developed their front ends. They spent a lot of time and effort doing this. Now, with basic chip design that you can buy off the shelf, there's less and less that you have to do. So we're finding that analog is less important than it's been. Now, of course, there are still high-end boutique companies that really spend a lot of time and effort, and you pay for that. But that being said, we're finding that analog is less and less important. Now, this started to happen in the recording end of the audio business. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we started to see the writing on the wall, maybe a little more, but analog equipment was still selling into sound reinforcement. It was still selling into live sound, and it was still selling into installed sound. And even now, that's all changed to digital, where again, you can get much more powerful gear for less money, and it's basically digitally based. So now we're seeing a big trend in the audio business away from analog. So just keep your eyes peeled when you look at magazines, look at the ads, and keep in mind how much of this is actually analog. When you go to a trade show, keep in mind how much analog am I actually seeing and how much of it is digital. And you'll see for yourself, analog may be dying. My guest today is sound designer and founder of Hook Audio, Anthony Matana. Anthony's found a novel and inexpensive way to incorporate binaural recording on an iOS device accessory that totally enhances just about any iPhone recording. Anthony approaches this from a pro's mindset, since he was a sound designer for Broadway shows, and Hook Audio has some innovative solutions as a result. I spoke with Anthony from his office in New York. How did the idea come about?
Yeah, great question. So I've been in New York for the last 6 years. I'm a musician and a composer by trade, and I've been working in New York City for the last 6 years composing original music for plays and then making a lot of the sound effects for all the Broadway musicals. So almost like a video animator. I was the sound effects guy on Broadway for the last 5 years. So my job has always been to sort of compose and create sort of immersive audio scores, a lot of soundscapes embedded with music, but a lot for sort of a theatrical setting. And a big thing for me when I was going to archive my work that was coming from the theater, you know, the way in which I compose music is very different than the way in which someone may compose for television or film. You're bouncing to sort of a stereo audio output. For me, I may be using 150 speakers on one show and 300 on the next. So there's no real way to hear my music unless you're there. So I started looking into technologies to figure out how I might be able to archive my work that's so crucial to sort of being there so that someone that wasn't could feel like they were. And that's when I discovered this binaural recording. Binaural recording has been around for decades. Lou Reed has a great album that he captured in binaural. You've got a lot of artists that have used binaural in the past. It's just never been something that could be adapted by the public. The current competition costs thousands of dollars. They require cables, adapters, all of these things. Things that someone like me, a sound designer, had access to. You know, an hour of load in, an hour and a half of load out, and then I'd have this. And, you know, anyone that experiences binaural audio, they listen on headphones and they hear someone move around them, they go, that's amazing. And for me too, when I was able to capture my shows, I'm like, this is amazing. It was like, there's got to be a way I can get this on Facebook. I can get this on Instagram. There's got to be a way that we can upgrade the way we record our lives by simply recording it the way our ears do. You know, binaural audio is audio captured identically to the way your ears experience it. So there's no processing, there's no pitching. It's getting us back to actually listening, to paying attention to like what is really happening around us. And I find that fascinating and I really like it. And for me too, you know, my work as a sound designer, people don't care about sound. they don't listen to music and sound the way I think a lot of us as composers and sound designers would like them to. And for me, I feel that's partially responsible because the consumers themselves, the directors, producers that I'm working with, don't have any control over the sound in their lives. When they go to hit a video on their phone, they're able to auto-stabilize, they're able to change the lighting, they're able to change the filter, the texture. They can't do anything with the sound. They just throw a Hail Mary and they kind of get what they get. And that's our biggest competition, good enough. They don't realize that. So for me, my journey in Hook, the first really consumer-friendly wireless Bluetooth headphone, it's the world's first Bluetooth binaural microphone, is sort of a vehicle to not only get people to be more creative and change the way they record stories in their lives, but to get people to care about sound, to understand that there is a range from good audio to bad audio. Because right now, people don't know it. They're capturing sound like they would capture video, and it's just a blurry image. But
this is actually the perfect time for this because, you know, binaural audio has been in and out of popularity for years. It seems to go in cycles.
Yeah.
And the big problem has always been that you needed headphones. And, of course, yep. We weren't in a headphone society until the smartphone came around, and now everybody's on phones all the time, so it's the perfect time for this.
And if you ask any teenager how many pairs of headphones they own, they normally say 3 to 5. So, yeah, without a doubt. I knew if I was going to try to get this to scale, you know, no one's going to add another piece of gear to their lives. We've already got way too many gadgets here. So if I thought, hey, for the same price, if I could simply replace a piece of gear in your lives, which are really great sounding, isolating, noise-canceling headphones that can be acting as a hands-free calling device, and then it's as simple as capturing and upgrading the way you record as unlocking your phone, maybe then binaural could scale. So I am trying to put that in a time where, you know, content creation is key. We have tons of celebrities, people becoming something because of the content they create at home. They're doing this all on their phones, and we are absorbing more content through social media than we ever have, and most of it through headphones and on our mobile devices. So this is binaural audio working straight with our phones seamlessly, affordably, and durably.
Well, it's a brilliant idea. I don't know why anyone hasn't thought of it before, but I'm glad you have, you know, putting the microphones exactly in the right place, you know, in the headphones,
right,
where you're listening to begin with, and that's where they ought to be. How long did it take you to put this together?
You know, I had the idea when I was working on a musical around February of 2014. So just over a little year and a half ago, I created the first prototype last summer of 2014, and we launched a Kickstarter. You're familiar with Kickstarter?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I ran something on my blog about it. I think I ran the video that you had on Kickstarter on the blog.
Oh, amazing.
To promote it, because I stumbled across it somehow and just found it fascinating, and I loved the demos that you had. So hopefully in some small way I helped you there.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure you did with your following. That's amazing. I try to keep track of everyone that comes in, and I have tools in place to monitor it. Maybe I did notice it there, but I'll have to check, and if I don't, I want to grab that link from you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so we launched the Kickstarter with our first prototype, you know, in fall of last year. It did really well, and we've been in manufacturing for these guys, you know, making them in 3 colors, doing the cases, doing all the packaging, pretty much all of this year. And we are in the final stages. Like, the factory is now we have the headsets, what they look like. We're now like, they're going through burn and freeze tests because we've sold to a bunch of countries to make sure they don't like blow up on an airplane. And once that's set, we produce the whole shipment, and we're looking to ship to most of our backers by the end of this year, just in a couple months.
How did the design come about? I mean, this whole thing, considering that you just really conceived it a year and a half ago, that's a fast turnaround.
It's got to be. It's got to be. I'm also 26, and I've been a theater artist for a while, so I don't know how to do anything but fast.
Yeah, you don't sleep.
I know it's fast. Yeah, I totally don't sleep. And I'm really connected. I really understand how people use social media. You know, you say, like, why hasn't anyone come up with it? Well, a lot of the guys I work with in the audio world, especially the guys that have worked in binaural, are nowhere near sort of embedded in and situated and active on social media sort of I have.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I'm kind of really noticing it, that people will do this. But, you know, I've always had a freelance mentality. As I said, as an artist myself, I've always been hungry and I've always been looking. And I think the biggest thing I do is resourcefulness. I find resources. So I had a bunch of buddies I went to school with that are all industrial and graphic designers. And I knew a big thing for me is if I'm going to make binaural audio commercially available, better have a sexy brand, better have a sexy logo, a good color, good sort of continuity throughout. To really make this, you know, sort of pop, to really know that people say, oh, Hook Audio is mobile 3D audio. And so I've asked around, I grab people from here, I grab people from there. For this, you know, we have a patent file on the product, but for something like this, we just got to get it out there. It's the first to market sort of thing. And I'm working full time right now just to make that happen. So
there's an app that goes with the unit as well. And
yeah.
It's one thing to design a piece of hardware. It's another thing to design an app that goes with it, because really they're two separate things. So how did that come about? Did you always conceive that there'd be an app with it?
No. So I was always hoping there wouldn't be, and I still hope there will never be. The reason the app exists, and it might go back to why you're kind of saying, why hasn't anyone done this before? Well, the app is a big reason. So Android and iOS, they're mobile operating systems. I mean, this is how far back rooted we are in audio, especially on mobile devices. So as you know, smartphones only capture mono audio. They only capture single channel. And that mic that's built in there is only mono. Yet they can output from the headphone jack stereo audio. Now that headphone jack on the phones is a mono input. That's not even a stereo input. There's no way to get stereo audio into a phone right now. And their Bluetooth structure natively in the operating systems is not set up to receive two channels of audio wirelessly, let alone high quality audio. That's why you see a lot of Bluetooth headphones out on the market that have a microphone for hands-free calling. Okay, so you can listen to stereo audio and then you can do hands-free calls. All of that Bluetooth protocol and that code within both of the operating systems is set up natively. So you could just grab that off the shelf and put it into your product. There's never been a product in the market that said, hey, we want to send two channels of audio, let alone we want to send two channels of 24-bit 48K WAV files, uncompressed with no delay, to you. Now the phones are like, what?
Yeah.
So, you know, that is an API, a custom proprietary Bluetooth codec that we have built from the ground up, that we are using a very specific chipset for, because of this, that it can happen. That was a big priority for me too. I knew if I'm going to do this, I'm not going to be capturing MP3s here. This is going to be real audio. So they're sending 24-bit 48K stereo audio. So aside from them being able to capture binaural 3D audio, what it's really doing is a firmware that allows you to send stereo audio to a phone, which no one's ever done. Because a lot of people don't care about sound, but we're hopefully going to change that.
I'm really shocked about that. I'll tell you that. I'm shocked. But
you got it.
You're telling me, man. One of my questions was going to be the audio limitations of Bluetooth, which it seems like you've gotten around.
They're terrible. We literally built it from the ground up. Yeah. It's funny. Bluetooth is capable of incredible things, but the people that make Bluetooth, the people that make Bluetooth products, think people don't care. They, you know, I see my competition. I think I repeated myself here. I think I said it's good enough. If they can get away with low quality Bluetooth using the Bluetooth there, they don't have to spend all the money in development. You know, most of our budget has gone towards this alone. They're going to do it. So people don't know. They don't know that it's possible, and it's so possible. So people say, hey, you're recording 24-bit with Bluetooth. What about the delay, the latency? It's like, well, there's no latency when you build your own codec. So that's what we've done. So hopefully, right, then the idea is with Hook's success, the way it can build, that either Android or iOS will natively integrate that API so that you can just then open your camera app and do it natively. Mm-hmm. Now, our app is literally a camera. It's just a video camera. You open it up, it goes, it looks just like your native camera app on your phone. Only thing being is that it's integrating with this codec. So you're able to do that.
Wow.
But you know, then other apps, any other kind of apps that record audio you have to integrate this API and then to use Hook to do that. It's just, we need to, you know, we got to build the momentum and make people understand that this is a great solution. And then people can integrate that.
Is it going to be just iOS or Android as well?
It'll be on Android and iOS, and then you'll be able to use that app on desktop, iPad, anything like that.
The reason why I ask is the developers that I know hate developing for Android only because there's so many different versions that you usually need.
You hit it right on the head. And imagine with all the different versions, trying to introduce a custom proprietary codec on them. It's insane. I mean, it's like, it's one thing to use the standard Bluetooth protocol on all the Android devices and test them all. It's another to introduce a massively different system that each phone has reacted very differently to.
Yeah, wow.
But that's what we've been developing on since we ended the Kickstarter campaign. Was testing and testing and testing on all these Android phones. It's a pain in the butt, but that's how it goes.
Were you funded only from Kickstarter?
We did Kickstarter, and that kind of was able to propel us into manufacturing. And then I've been bootstrapped on this from the get-go. It's been a priority for me. I want to make sure we're in control of this and the people that really understand this are. So then we did a very small friends and family investment round after the Kickstarter. And that's been propelling us to our launch in a couple months.
When you launch, is there a particular number of products that you have to sell? Or I know that you have a lot of pre-orders. Does that take you where you need to go, just in the pre-orders?
No, not in the pre-orders alone, but the initial order that we're making with the intent that we do sell them sort of at retail price in both retail locations with partners that we've been having conversations with and we'll set up once we launch, and then through our site. Once we sort of go through that order, which honestly the pre-orders have taken up a lot for, then we're kind of breaking even and we're propelling. But look, like I said, we're bootstrapped. We're always looking for money. We're always looking for support and money. And I'm doing this within my close circle because I do think my team is definitely the ones to bring it to light. I mean, no one has had any experience with this kind of codec, with this kind of hardware. So we're keeping it simple. We're keeping it small. And for that, yeah, we're going to need to sell product once we launch. But we've done really well with the pre-orders and the support that we've gotten from the Kickstarter thus far.
It sounds like you have a second product there with the codec as well.
Definitely. And you haven't even heard the third through six products we got coming after that.
Well, that was another one of my questions, if there's other versions or other models that you have, or maybe even a pro model.
Yeah, there's definitely, as we call it, the Rolls Royce. You know, a huge market that is popping up. It's flying out everywhere, right? It's this virtual reality market, VR, yeah. AR, immersive Oculus. You know, what we like to say with the Verse is it captures passive VR. You know, it's sort of a GoPro. That's why we kind of call it the GoPro for sound, right? You're going to watch back and you're going to feel like you're there, but you're forced to the perspective of that person that was recording. You can't move. So imagine another consumer wearable device that allowed you to capture your own head tracking 3D audio. So that if you were to take that audio that you captured and play it back on a head mounted display, the audio would move with you. Requires a little bit of a different microphone, but it's something we're working on.
The videos that you have on your page are very impressive, especially the ones that go from mono to binaural. It's like night and day. And what I found, I listened on headphones and then I listened on my desktop speakers, and you could even hear it on the desktop speakers. It was dramatic enough that it was easy to hear.
That's amazing. That's, hey, music to my ears. And again, you know, a resource from going to theater school. That's my roommate. My roommate here in Brooklyn, Bart Courtwright. He's a cinematographer. He's my age. And he's just a He's a beast, and he makes content. And he's been a huge part of this team with video. You think about it with GoPro, right? GoPro sells product because of the videos they make. So we made that a priority from the get-go. We're not going to have this product for a year. We need videos that properly showcase that. And a lot of those concepts have come from, that could only come from a filmmaker's mind, which is where Bart sort of pushed those. And he introduced the Hook Live sessions, especially you from your music background. Have you checked out the Hook Live sessions?
I have, you bet. They're very cool.
So yeah, so these one take single shot music videos. Yeah, and we find a lot of indie acts here in Brooklyn. We've been traveling around, and that's kind of becoming its own thing to say, hey, this is the way we should be displaying, you know, music videos on the internet.
You need to go to Louisiana for that.
That's what I hear. We're trying to go to Louisiana and Nashville.
Amazing musicians. Really, I mean, the feel is right. Just, you don't find it anywhere else in the world. Just incredible.
It's true. If you ever hear like binaural music recordings, it's always like down on the line in New Orleans, like with all the horn players and everything. It'd be amazing, right? Because you walk with them and it'd be so cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Well, this could actually really begin a whole new way to document things. The way I see it, or way I potentially hear it. Because up until now, as you said in one of the videos, everything is very flat and one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, when it changes to that multi-dimension, then not only do you hear things differently, but you kind of think of everything differently as well. You tell a different story.
Yep, without a doubt. You know, we want to change the way you record the world. And more than that, you know, I want people to demand better audio in their lives. And I think the way they understand that is by understanding what good audio sounds like. And the hook first, the audio that it captures.
Yeah, especially when it's as dramatic as it is. Who's the market for this?
It's a good question, because I don't know if we're necessarily going to know until we really launch and see how people are using it. I can tell you right now that the blind community has been ecstatic over this. They've used binaural recording for years. And now that they have it available on their smartphones, the National Federation for the Blind has been huge with us. Independent musicians, producers, recorders, all these musicians that want to, you know, are creating content, and DJs that are putting it on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, they're all ecstatic about it. Journalists like BBC and This American Life have reached out to us. They want to put them on their journalists out in the field for all these podcasts that are growing very popular.
Yeah.
So that you can feel like you're there listening to it, because a lot of us are listening to podcasts on headphones. And really just teens in general. You know, teens are always looking for the next technology to make their Instagram videos kind of stand out and be cool. And if they can, you know, upgrade the quality of their audio from music festivals and what they put on YouTube, they've been really, really excited about it as well.
I had a friend that used to work at NPR, and he was the audio guy for a travel show. The show was on for years. It's not now. It's been off for a while. But he would record everything in surround with four microphones.
Yeah.
And there was just some amazing things that he had where, you know, they'd be out in the jungle and you can hear... You can hear, you know, elephants over to the side, and you can, and there's so much going on all the time. The problem was no one could ever hear it the way,
yeah,
you know, the way he could, unless you had that available to you, that, you know, available to listen to surround sound. you couldn't experience it. It's a real drag.
Right.
So, I mean, this would change it completely.
Totally. I mean, you know, the funny thing too about home theater systems, when you have sort of a 5.1 system set up, DTS and Dolby Digital, when they have those stickers on your receiver, they have those stickers on the receiver because that receiver company, like Yamaha or Sony, has licensed an algorithm from DTS or Dolby Digital. And what that algorithm, what that piece of software does is it literally takes two channels of audio. All your DVDs, your VHS, anything coming out of your television is all outputted in two channels. But the algorithm that DTS and Dolby Digital use sort of digitally splits that to five systems. So the funny thing about receivers and surround sound and what the Hook Verse captures is that you could take a surround sound capture with Hook, put it into your receiver with a 5.1, and it's going to move in surround sound just like it does on your headphones. People don't really realize that. So it's really like a consumer surround sound capturing device. The receiver and that algorithm that's on that your receiver will do all the work for you already. You just have to hit record on your Verse headphones.
Well, I was big in the surround sound music sector for a long time. I did about 120 different music projects and films and whatever that were going to DVD. And the record labels were very, very hot on it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And they were willing to pay for it as well, which is kind of nice. But then what happened was they found out that there really wasn't a big market on the home front because they had the mother-in-law factor that they called it, which is basically, you know, someone in the house, a female in the house would basically say, why is that speaker over there? Why are the wires on the floor? And next thing you know, the surround speakers and you know, the center speaker were piled in a corner someplace and no one could ever hear, you know, surround sound, or else they couldn't set it up in a proper place, calibrate it right. So you never really got the effect of it. And that's the beauty of this, where none of that matters anymore.
And hopefully, maybe though, if this does get people to understand it, maybe women will become equal and understand to men that we're not trying to push towards men or women on this. We're trying to push towards humans. I mean, it's funny, right? There's no mother-in-law effect when you get that 65-inch plasma screen. You put that on a wall. Everyone wants that.
Yeah.
That's much more hideous than a set of surround sound speakers. It's just like, sound used to really be a part of the conversation. And for me, it's a little weird, you know, because I'm young. I'm like I said, I'm in my 20s and I'm grown up in a world. I care so much about sound. I'm one of the only people my age that's caring this much about it. And most of the people I relate to are those that are, you know, 15 to 25 years older than me that remember sort of golden age of people making an effort on the consumer side to get better audio. But we continue to compress it. We continue to condense it. It's funny, right? You saw audio start to be transmitted through that cabinet receiver that would get the radio in the early like 1990s and 1920s. And that's a single mono source. Look what we're doing now with consumer Bluetooth speakers. We're actually devolving back to a mono speaker source that's like right in the living room that you can just put there that you consume yourself around. We've gone from like single speaker up to this peak of like really immersive audio back down to this portability, you know, crappy quality existence. Yeah. We have to give consumers a product that can make them see better audio so that then they demand it in their lives.
Yeah, believe me, Anthony.
They're going to keep.
I have this conversation over and over with some of my contemporaries lamenting the fact that this has happened. I mean, when we were growing up in the 70s, for instance, every house, every dorm room, every apartment had a good stereo system because that was just part of
like,
what you
like
did.
Heaven.
You bought you that was part of what you did. You had to have that. Even if you didn't have anything to sit on, you had a good sound system. And
That's awesome. And
I'm not kidding when I say good. I mean, it's far superior to most of the things that you find today that was just common. So, you know, we've devolved in so many ways because that was a big deal at one point in time. But, you know, one of the things that we've seen here, which, you know, directly applies to Hook, is that people buy audio, buy music based on the convenience. It's always been that way. Whenever there's something that's more convenient, people go that way. And you can see it go from, you know, vinyl records to tape, to digital downloads, to, you know, MP3s, to, you know, streaming now. So you see that convenience happening. But the thing about it is, what you're doing is very convenient. It doesn't require anything different at all. It doesn't require anything else except, you know, people that record in binaural. And now, you know, this is an easy way to do it because it doesn't require that you need a new set of headphones or extra speakers or you know, a different receiver or anything like that. So that's the cool part. It is convenient. And that's why I think this probably has a chance.
Yeah. You know, I feel like it's kind of a blessing and a curse that, you know, given my age and I've always cared about audio, I only have been trying to get the world to care about audio, being very, very, very aware of the sonic sort of atmosphere in which we live in. I'm very familiar with the products that we have currently right now. And I'm kind of feel like ignorance is bliss because I don't know that world. So for me, I knew I got to get people to care this way. And I'm not going to try to shove it down their throats by being like, you need to have these microphones. You know, I'm trying to find a hybrid. I'm trying to say, okay, I get it. I'm not going to be able to reinvent the wheel with a whole new product that you're going to integrate into your life. But there's something about the product that you all seem to love right now because of Beats, because of sneakers on your head, which is headphones. And binaural is good with headphones. So maybe there's a way that I can kind of, you know, give them what they need and then some. And maybe that's the way, you know.
Well, you're doing it the right way because you're coming more or less from a consumer, from a ground level up rather than the way it's always been done, which has been from a pro level down. And it's really difficult for a consumer to get their arms around it that way.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, this is much, much better, I think. And I foresee big things from you.
Well, I really appreciate that, Bobby. Thank you.
One last question, Anthony. What's the best piece of business advice that you've either received from someone or that you kind of learned along the way during this process?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a little bit specific to sort of if you're developing a product. I know I can speak really well on the business of a product. And someone told me once, they said, if you've got something, if you've made something, even an idea or a product that someone much smarter than you and much more creative than you can turn around and use in a way that you never even thought of, then the product might be successful. So it's like you don't have all the use cases. You don't know them all. But if you make something that someone creates a use case for you, then you've got something. You got to trust humans. We're very, very creative, and it's leading to celebrate that.
That's very cool. You know, I ask this of everybody that comes on the show, and no one's ever gotten even close to that. That's cool.
All right.
Yeah, great.
I'll take it.
Well, very cool, Anthony. Thank you for your time. This has been great. I'm going to go order a set myself, actually, because
amazing.
These look cool. I think I got to have it.
Oh, thank you, Bobby. I really appreciate that.
When are they going to ship? When are they scheduled?
It's looking really good for December of this year. Manufacturing and factories, especially for a product like this, we don't have a lot of pull. They sometimes are just like, yeah, we don't care. We're going to delay you. It's like,
yeah.
Whoa. If anything at the latest, it might be January of next year, but we've got the product. They just have to burn it and make sure it doesn't blow up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as long as they say, but it's looking like December.
Very cool. All right, Anthony. Yeah. Thanks for your time, man. Good luck.
Thanks, Bobby. I appreciate it.
You can find out more about Hook Audio and hear some great examples at hookaudio.com. That's Hook with an E, HOOKE Audio, one word, hookaudio.com. Check it out because I was so impressed, I bought a pair. So I'll let you know what it sounds like when I get them. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, send them to questions@bobbiointercircle.com. It's questions@bobbiointercircle.com. Many thanks to Steve Cherubino. He's the host of the EDM Producer Podcast at edmmr.com. He helps put the show together. Many, many thanks, Steve. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyownercircle.com, or find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Mixcloud, or Google Play. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyownercircle.com, you'll find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I'll see you next time.